done, honourable members, to also just formally render my apology for the changes of today, dealing with the Foreign Services Bill only. We were supposed to deal with the three pieces of legislation. So I know that some of us received the invitation from the budget speech and may have said, no, we're going to be in the committee meeting. I'm sorry that I'm messing you up now, where we are free this afternoon to attend the budget speech. That's the second announcement. The third announcement that I just wanted to make by way of also kick-starting the meeting, Honourable Ntebe, yeah, to say thank you very much to our two colleagues. It is two, huh? It is three from Durban now. Oh, it's five from Durban. Okay, the five colleagues from Durban, particularly Masandia Devet, who is the chief law advisor on international law. It has nothing to do with Kasta Semenya. she is here to help us through the presentation today. And Klupeka and Derko also had to negotiate outside of the normal time frames to make sure that we can have that presentation today. We want to appreciate the fact that we are indeed able to proceed with what is a very important piece of legislation for us in terms of our international relations and positioning ourselves as a country. I will just as an appendix here add, members, I thought of all of you when I saw the article from Saroj about the meeting that happened yesterday between SADC and the EU. Now there's two arrangements. There's one between SACU and the UK that happened last week. This one is SADC and the EU that happened yesterday, and it was a very good meeting. We are hoping that when Honda withdraws from the UK, they will increase their manufacturing capacity in South Africa. You may know that one of the biggest buyers of South African vehicles is in fact the European Union, and the UK standing out as one of them. The Americans are fighting with, or rather the people of the UK, the manufacturers in the UK, are fighting with the US because the US wants to put very, very harsh tariffs on the vehicles manufactured in the UK, and the manufacturers in the UK are not happy with that. Right. Formally then, to request Klupeka to just do for us the apologies that we have for today. Good.
Thank you, Chairperson. And honorable members and colleagues from the department and colleagues from Parliament. Apologies that we have received. The first one is from the minister who's attending a joint meeting of all cabinet committees. That is the first one. She cannot be with us today. And the second one is for the DG, who's not with us also. I just received the information that there's a bereavement at his home. The next apologies is for Mr. Faber, who's seeing the doctor today, and also Mr. Mabibu, who's also seeing the doctor today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me just add to that. In the letter from the minister, she is indicating that the DG would be representing the department, but then the DG had this bereavement this morning, and therefore cannot be with us. Also to add that although we don't have a formal apology from the Honourable Msanga, he is representing the gambling bill to the provincial government this morning. but we won't note that as an apology because we've not received it in writing. That said, honourable members, can I then ask you, please, why are you not an advocate? Because you're part of an advocate of that, okay. Can we then ask you, please, madam, to lead us through the Foreign Service Bill? Members, you know the process that we're going to follow. It's a Section 75 bill, and today is essentially the first presentation to us. It has been already approved in the Portfolio Committee in the National Assembly as well in December, and it is now before us as Section 75. So it's the initial briefing, where today's briefing is essentially for us to get clarification and to raise questions for clarification primarily. But as has happened in other meetings as well, we aren't going to straitjacket ourselves. Any other matter that you want to raise related to the bill, we will accommodate as best we can. Please, Advocate Avet.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair, and honourable members. Thank you for the opportunity to make this presentation here today, and thank you for noting that the DG has apologised for not being here today. Let me just then give some context for why this bill came into being, and just refer to the context of against which the bill was developed. You would see that the White Paper on South Africa's foreign policy expresses the vision that South Africa should be a successful and influential and a leading member of the international community, and that we can really contribute to the development of our region, our continent, and the world. We also, in the White Paper, there's a big emphasis on pursuing national economic policy objectives, and an emphasis on leveraging opportunities that arise internationally to the benefit of South Africa. Now, the primary objective of the bill is to further South Africa's foreign relations by creating a professional, unified foreign service under DIRCO's management. South Africa's foreign relations will be more focused and more efficient. And I will come to the importance of the unified part in that sentence. And we are of the view that the bill will strengthen the accountability of officials and the foreign service as a whole. Now, currently, South Africa does not have a legislative mechanism to optimally support the mandate of the department to achieve the country's foreign policy objectives. So there is currently no legislative framework, and that's very important to note. One must also understand that there are unique challenges that are faced on a daily basis in respect of the realities of the management and operations of the missions in foreign countries and in foreign jurisdictions, and that international relations are conducted in an increasingly complex world, and the Foreign Service has to be able to respond appropriately and adequately and often immediately. We have seen with the volatile situation in the world, with leaders making statements that can have ripple effects on trade and economy and security, it is very important to understand that DIRCO is functioning in exactly that very complex world. Also, international relations are executed in a global environment, and that operates in diverse legislative systems. We have missions across the world. All have where they are based, all have their own legal systems and legislative frameworks, but there needs to be a understanding that when officials go there, the national domestic legislation that is applicable to public service is not always the biggest supporter of what needs to be happening in the missions. And because the Foreign Service has not been legislated for, it is still operating under the public service. and it's not always optimally applicable. So South Africa's representation abroad at present includes also a wide variety of persons. It would include career diplomats within DIRCO. It would have employees from other departments, especially experts, departments deal specifically with, say, agriculture, home affairs, the police, defense, and so on. And then we also have appointees from outside the public service. So it's a wide variety of people that serve abroad. Now, because we didn't have any legislative framework, various government departments with officials' admissions operated in a very fragmented manner and followed inconsistent approaches. The difficulties in managing and the administration of the current foreign service system within the confines of the legislation aimed at regulating the public service in South Africa are evident and also leads to concerns of compliance to legislation by the Auditor General. Now, in getting to the stage where we were able to draft the bill, extensive research has been done by the department in respect of comparable countries such as Brazil, Kenya, Canada, and the Philippines, and that is just to name a few. Now, from that study and from that research, it was clear that the majority of foreign services have legislative frameworks through which the administration and management of the foreign service are managed, and they are regulated under the departments of foreign affairs or international relations. International practice further shows that for an effective execution of international relations, the foreign service needs to be supported by appropriate legislation and a framework that is flexible enough to address the challenges posed on the level of operational level in missions. Now, just to take one of the members through the process that we followed with this bill originated a very long time ago. In 2010, it was first mooted in the department, and then the research started, and then it got to a more concrete phase in 2015, when we presented it through the cluster systems and through cabinet. It was approved by cabinet on the 26th of August 2015. I won't go in detail of all the dates, but it then was submitted to Parliament and assigned to the portfolio committee. That was then published for general comment. The portfolio committee had public hearings on the bill, and during those public hearings and afterwards, 19 departments made presentations at the portfolio committee, and that was between 2017 and 2018. So you can see it was a very, very thorough process. We've listed the departments that have actually made presentations. It is clear that the departments with a concern or with an interest of what is happening at missions, and where some of them are also have officials at those missions, they were especially coming to the portfolio committee to make their presentations. We were also having presentations with NAHAWU on a few cases to make sure, and also with the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council to make sure that all the unions are on board with this bill. And we got the endorsement of that last year from the unions. What the approach that the department took was, after each of the departments would come to the portfolio committee and make presentations and raise certain concerns, we would then have the DG to DG level discussions, and on a technical level to iron out all of the difficulties. And I think we managed that in a good way. So then, as the chair alluded, the bill was finally adopted by the portfolio committee in November 2018, and then it was tabled in the National Assembly on 4 December and adopted, and then referred to this Honourable Select Committee. Now, we also wanted to, we have circulated the bill that is at before you today, but we want also to highlight that then, we will go clause by clause later on, but we want to highlight that certain things in the bill that we originally presented to the Portfolio Committee, the Portfolio Committee has then amended, and that was then adopted by the National Assembly. For instance, a clause on application of the bill, it's now clause 2, that clarify that this bill is the primary legislation that is applicable to the Foreign Service. There is now also a clause that states the requirements that a member of a Foreign Service must meet before that person can be transferred or posted, as we would call it, in the at DIRCO. There is also a clause added on the criteria that a head of mission must meet before that person can be appointed as a head of mission. There is a clause that gives DIRCO the mandate to acquire, manage and dispose of immovable properties abroad used for Foreign Service, and I will come back to that because it is a very important matter. They also inserted a clause on what constitutes locally recruited personnel or what that is meant. Or the ability to appoint locally recruited personnel. There is also a provision for more extensive consultations with stakeholders, including National Treasury, before certain decisions are taken with regard to the administration of the Foreign Service. And then there was also a fences clause developed for the bill. So those are just the amendments to the original bill. Now, coming back to the contents of the bill, and I'll just walk the honourable members through what is contained in the bill. Just to say what is the purpose of the bill, I've already alluded to that, but this is now to provide for the management, the administration, the accountability, and the functioning of a professional Foreign Service. It also provides for operational requirements that are suitable and supportive of the operations of the Foreign Service in a global environment. Now, clause 1 is your normal clause on definitions that is assisting one with the interpretation of the provisions of the bill. And clause 2 clarifies the application of the bill, namely that in case of a conflict with other legislation, this bill shall apply. So this is very important for legal certainty, that there is no question as to, we don't expect any conflict with other legislation because I believe we did a thorough job to ensure that it wouldn't happen, but in case it happens, then this bill shall apply because it is a bill that is very specific to the Foreign Service. Then clause 3 of the bill defines the Foreign Service, and it's important to note that the Foreign Service consists of all South African missions and those that will serve at the missions that are accredited to a foreign state for the period of their service abroad. So if you are posted, and in the South Africa's practice, diplomatic practice, usually the term of a posting is 4 years. So for that 4 years where you are posted and accredited, you would be part of the Foreign Service. As indicated before, the Foreign Service will consist of all kinds of all departments, including the head of mission. So you could find a mission that would consist of DIRCO colleagues. It might consist of a head of mission that is appointed from outside the public service. You might have people from Home Affairs, Defence, Agriculture, even health if it's a big mission, labor if there's a specific need. But all of them would now be regarded as part of the Foreign Service falling under the management and authority of the head of mission. The Foreign Service, the work of the Foreign Service now to give that mandate shall be to promote and advance international relations and cooperation in an effective, coherent and comprehensive manner. DIRCO, the department, is responsible then for conducting and coordinating the international relations and cooperation of the Republic at the bilateral, regional and multilateral level through the Foreign Service. DIRCO is responsible for the implementation of the Republic's foreign policy and for promoting the national interests and values in line with this foreign policy. The Foreign Service will be managed and administered by DIRCO, and DIRCO must in this regard administer all representations in the Republic. This is a function that the DIRCO is already doing. All of these are things that DIRCO is already doing, but there was not in the history of South Africa an act that regulates this. So this is quite an historic achievement, I think, for both committees and for Parliament if this bill is adopted. DIRCO will also lead the coordination and the alignment of the Republic's international relations between all three spheres of government. This will ensure that all three spheres give a common message about South Africa and make sure we do this in a coordinated fashion. DIRCO will continue to render protocol services to designated foreign and national dignitaries as prescribed. There will be a regulation and a policy on, and there is, and it will just be formalized. It will continue to render consular services in line with the guidelines for the provision of consular services. It will act as custodian of international agreements which the Republic is a party to, as well as the reports that are submitted, and render legal advice to government on international law. Conduct all diplomatic communications between the Republic and foreign states and international organizations, and perform other functions required for the effective management and administration of the Foreign Service. Now, Clause 4 provides for the requirements to be able to serve as members of the Foreign Service. So what it does is that it says that the head of a national department must in writing notify the Director General, and this is Director General of DIRCO, that a certain employee has been approved from that department to be transferred to a South African mission. A member of the Foreign Service may not take up his or her position at the mission until such time, and these are the requirements. He or she has successfully completed the prescribed mandatory training requirements, as you or she met the prescribed requirements for such transfer, must have a security clearance, which is very important, and must have approval for transfer by the Director General. Then, of course, Clause 5 again regulates now the responsibility of a head of mission to manage and administer the mission. The head of the mission will be under the authority of the Director General and will act on instructions of the relevant senior managers responsible for the management of the particular mission. As I alluded to, this was added by the Portfolio Committee. The criteria that the head of mission must meet to be appointed as the head of mission, the head of mission is appointed by the President, but this is to say that there are certain criteria that should be taken into account when that decision is made. It must be a fit and proper person. That person may have knowledge and skills and experience and must reflect broadly the diversity of South Africa. Clause 6 deals with the recall of members of the Foreign Service under specific circumstances. Now, recall in our context can have various forms. It can be a recall, in other words, a transfer back to South Africa because there was misconduct. It can also be a situation where the other country where you are served has declared you a persona non grata, either because of your own behavior or they have just decided that they don't want you there, and it can also be for political reasons. It can be a form of retaliation. So there are various scenarios under which there will be a situation of that the department will have to recall a member of the Foreign Service. So this Clause 6 makes provision for that. We also in this bill now provides formally for our diplomatic academy that is already functioning, but that this will now be more formal in that it will provide certain, it will have certain responsibilities to provide training for members of the Foreign Service and training for the department. It will also have, and it's already accredited. SAQWA accreditation has already been obtained for the courses, but in this case it, they will also have the, and they're already doing that also, they will also be able to train diplomats from other countries and issue certificates and so on. Now, Clause 8 is an important clause for the department because it deals with consultation and provides that consultative, coordinating and other mechanisms as the minister may deem necessary for the effective execution of the bill may be established. So this is an important aspect. And what it does establish, the bill will be establishing, is the Consultative Forum for International Relations. And that is a national intergovernmental forum as contemplated in the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, where all the provinces, all the local municipalities, the local SALGA, and all the local authorities are, would be serving, where the where this consultation will take place as to how South Africa takes forward its international relations. There is already guidelines before Cabinet on the coordination and alignment of activities relating to international relations that will be applicable to all spheres of government, and that would also be now published in the Gazette so that there can be no doubt as to how South Africa will go about in a professional fashion to promote all of its interests. Clause 9 is an important clause for the department. And this is that the minister will now have the power to acquire, manage, dispose, lease, and rent the immovable property of Durco outside the department, the republic, which is used for the Foreign Service. Currently, that duty and that responsibility lies with the Department of Public Works. But it is very, very difficult to have to also manage the portfolio that South Africa has abroad, the property portfolio, and therefore there were numerous challenges, but this has now been sorted out. So all decisions on disposal, especially of immovable assets, will be done in consultation with the Minister of Public Works and the Minister of Finance. A decision to dispose of immovable properties must be, of course, in the interest of the effective management of the Foreign Service, and it must benefit the Republic in order to achieve the best functional and financial and social return that can be get if that property is being disposed of. Clause 10 deals with locally recruited personnel. This is also one that was added by the Portfolio Committee. This is just stating the fact that South African citizens, but it's important to note, who are authorized to work in terms of the laws of the foreign state where that person is, may be employed as a locally recruited person, a personnel member at the South African mission. Then Clause 11 is again into the standard clauses that we find in legislation, and that provides for codes and directives that the minister may make to assist the proper management and administration of the Foreign Service. It is important to note that Durco has a number of codes in terms of which it is at this moment administering the Foreign Service, and all of that will have to be reviewed to make sure we cover all angles and then include it as part of these codes under this article. And then Clause 12 makes provision for the delegation of powers by the minister. Clause 13, also important one for the Portfolio Committee, is that it now creates certain offences. For instance, offences committed abroad will be there will be the possibility of prosecuting it in South Africa. A person that makes false representations, or we sometimes have a situation where there would be somebody that pretends or make a false representation to represent the government of South Africa, such a person would now be criminally accountable, and a crime for that has been established. Also, the misuse of state resources have been criminalized, and if you act and bring the Republic in disrepute, you will also be guilty of an offense. Now, clause 40 again is the very standard clause where the minister may make regulations for the proper implementation of the bill, and then for 15 is the short title. Now, that is just a run through the provisions of the bill. Of course, we please, if there's any questions, we would not be, you know, we would be quite willing to give context to those things. But just to say, what are the implications of the bill? The bill, we believe, professionalizes the South African international relations through the establishment of the Foreign Service. It's the first time that the Republic will have legislation that govern international relations and the Foreign Service. DIRCA will be responsible for coordinating of international relations. DIRCA will be required by legislation to take full responsibilities for the duties assigned to it, and the provisions of the bill will be applicable to all members of the Foreign Service. We also believe that this bill will improve the operation and administration of DIRCA and the Foreign Service. And that is our presentation, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, let me just assist in the deliberations by saying that we have the briefing today. We will again on the 13th of March look at any of the written submissions that has been provided to us, and on the 20th of March we will present it to you for finalization. Just three comments from my side to add. The one is, when the public hearings were held in 2017, I was, as chairperson, invited to participate in those public meetings that I did in Pretoria, and it was indeed very helpful input that we received there. The second thing to mention is that we are also the house, as the NCLP, we are the house that is particularly positioned to deal with intergovernment relations between also the three spheres of government. And therefore, there is a particular responsibility on us when we look at this bill, because we know that many of our provinces, as we listen to the State of the Province addresses, would talk about the investment and the partnerships that they have with other countries of the world, and it is important that we have a way in which that can be properly coordinated. And as has been said, we have not had that, and this legislation is trying to address that. The third and final comment that I just wanted to make, I wanted to, that slide that talks about the different departments of government that has been consulted. And you will see that there are a number of those departments. If you look at slide 9, I've just highlighted those departments that also reports to us as the two select committees, the Department of Public Works, the Department of Trade and Industry, the Department of Tourism, the Department of Labor, the Department of Transport, as well as the Department of Energy. Now, we know that we are in agreement that tourism is a main money spinner for us. But then we have heard the complaint from the National Department of Tourism is that when they have an office, hypothetically, in Beijing, in China, how do you reach tourists from other parts of China to attract them to South Africa? And this bill will help us to be able to streamline that. when we visited with the chairperson of the NCLP, our embassy in Poland, the embassy, and I'm concluding with this one, raised the question of the assets in the embassy. Now they have old pictures there in the embassy, and they expect the embassy, the AG, the Attorney General, expected the embassy to give an evaluation of those pictures. And the ambassador said he's not been trained to do that, and he doesn't know what to do. And therefore, we had the qualification in the audit of Durco in 2017. Am I right? It was 2017 when you had the qualification. The qualification, when they presented it to us, primarily concentrated on these assets. And this bill will enable us to work through that type of dynamic. The final thing related to assets is that we had a house, if you can call it a house, it was three stories high, in Florida, in the US, that served as our embassy. And when we visited the ambassador there, who was at that time Ambassador Sisulu, she was saying that she feels very uncomfortable in this massive three-story building. And you have your ambassadorial offices on the corner, and the rest of it is just spaces that's there for the embassy to, for the ambassador to have parties and to accommodate guests and things like that. In Florida, it was a major cost to us, and we owned the building. And the ambassador was saying we can sell that building and find a smaller space from which we could operate from. So this legislation enables the Department of International Relations to take the lead in terms of ensuring that we are also cost effective in terms of the operations of our embassies in other parts of the world. Now, if you look at the United States, I know we have the embassy in Florida, but then we have decided as a democratic government that we need to look at the south of the U.S. as well. And what do we open up there? We then find that Durco is inhibited in terms of what it can do, because you now need to consult with the Department of Public Works. We've had all these different apartheid administrations in South Africa, and you need to find out whether Bophuthatswana by any chance had a building in that area. And the Minister of International Relations and Cooperation is inhibited because he has equal status with the Minister of Public Works. What this legislation therefore does is it gives a little bit more authority to the Minister of International Relations to engage with the Department of Public Works and look at how we can actually resolve that. I won't talk about the human elements of it in detail, but that comes into it as well. If we have South Africans that are studying or that are working abroad, they go through the Department of Home Affairs, and we don't know. I mean, there was a crisis in one country now where it was a natural crisis. And who is there for the council to look at the South Africans? Let's look at Myanmar. If we look at Myanmar and the crisis that we had there, that Durco don't have a record. The records are with the Department of Home Affairs. And we're saying that as a country that wants to look after our citizens abroad, it is better that we begin to improve the coordination and have it as a primary responsibility. Therefore, we call it a primary legislation, the primary responsibility of this department. So that's also just in addition to what has been so adequately presented to us, what we're hoping to achieve through this legislation. Members, you are able to make comments as well as to raise questions. I noticed the two hands. We left the Honorable Haifas. He's from the Eastern Cape, but he's also the chairperson of the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development. Then we'll have, after him, the Honorable Ted Blanche, who is the delegate from the Western Cape. And we know that the Western Cape is one of the big spinners for tourism in the country. But also, we have the coastal areas in the Western Cape. And we are giving them the opportunity to make comments and questions. Maybe I will add, if Honorable Ntebe is not yet ready to add his question, I'll add my questions after the talk. Honorable Hai, please.
Thank you very much, Chair, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Advocate, for the presentation. First, in terms of the conduct, Advocate, perhaps you should, if you could highlight for us what has been the challenges in the past 25 years. That is not forcing you to come with this legislation. But for me, when I look at the bill, it's more focusing on the staff of the departments, and therefore DECO will be coordinating. For me, I don't see why we should have a bill on this issue, or even an act. Because to me, this looks like a standard operating procedure manual for HR and the administration. So it should just be a policy. I don't think you need an act for staff, because this is about staff relations with the management, and therefore it requires just a policy. You don't have to go through the processes of enacting an act to address issues of staff. If perhaps you could clarify for us. So that's why I say perhaps if you could, as part of the context, perhaps tell us what in the past 25 years, what is it that you have not been able to do that will require now an act to address those things that you cannot address in a form of a standard operating manual for HR and administration. Chair, but I would also, because I'm not saying that we should not deal with it, but I'm just highlighting this point. So, Chair, I would also like, because the departments that also make presentation in the PC, because we don't have much time, but I would suggest if we could have their written submissions, all these departments and entities of government. Because if you look at the, that's why I'm saying, for me it's more of an internal. That's why you don't even have external stakeholders that participated in the process of enacting this. It's mainly department and entities of government, except NEHAO, which is also has a relationship because they are representing the workers. Other than NEHAO and ex-South African ambassadors, mainly those that have participated in the process are government departments and entities. You don't have any other external. It therefore proves the point that this is just an internal matter that only requires coordination of the affected departments and entities. So I would request that we should also get those submissions without necessarily inviting them, so that when we consider the submissions and the voting on clause by clause, at least we have an understanding of the inputs of those departments. Sorry, I'm also concerned that it took a long time. Perhaps PC is not here, but because you've been interacting with them, why it took them 3 years to pass this legislation? You know, because it was introduced to the PC, I think, in 2015 or 16, if I'm not mistaken. But it was only passed on the 4th of December last year. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Balanch.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, on page 9,
we have, you know, an indication of all the participating departments. And if you go now to page 17, and that was covered properly by the advocate, and I'm just reading on the first bullet point there, Foreign Service, okay, administer all foreign representations in the Republic. Okay, meaning also now that people, you know, from other departments obviously going to serve there under the mentorship management, whatever, you know, obviously of the person in charge there. I was just wondering how let's take a police official now. Let's say there's a police official or somebody from the Defence Force. If there is disciplinary issues, how is that going to be dealt with? Remember, that person is appointed in terms of very specific legislation. And I was just wondering, I need clarity on that. Chairperson, then I also want to, you know, just touch on the issues that my honourable colleague already touched on. You know, this bill seemed to be focusing on administration mainly, and my concern is maybe I'm just not, you know, I don't see it here properly. It's silent, as far as I'm concerned, about the outcomes that we want. And, you know, I was just wondering, how are we going to address this? This is now how they're going to organize themselves, stuff like that. But how are we going to make sure that the interest of Republic mentioned here is going to be pursued and pursued properly? I don't see, you know, a lot of that. Chairperson, then lastly, I think that is also quite clear here, is that, you know, they will be able now to, in terms of immovable assets and stuff, you know, procure that, blah, 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 all that things. Will that mean now that that expertise will be also form part of that mission or whatever there? Or is that going to be situated or, you know, catered for in South Africa, in Durco's department here? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Let me add mine. If we look at slide 3, the second bullet, advocate, we talk about creating a professional unified Foreign Service. Now, the members that you have before you today, we are responsible for 9 departments of government, including DERCO. So it's actually 8 on and off. That's why I read those departments on slide 9. Now, it would have been lovely to have the DG or another member of the executive here, because I would have loved to get an indication of whether there were any reservations that were raised with regard to this legislation by the other departments. Let me be practical and say, if you look at the Department of Trade and Industry, when we participated in the World Trade Organization meetings, we have an ambassador in the WTO, Ambassador Xavier. We don't have somebody from DERCO participating in that. And the practical concern is, when we look at these multilateral relations that we have, has that been raised, for example, with the Department of Trade and Industry? And can you give us an assurance that when we have a unified Foreign Service, we will not lose the effectiveness of these other departments? And I'm just using DGI as one. I've earlier mentioned tourism as well. The second thing that I have is on page 5. You talk about appointees there in the final bullet, the last phrase. Appointees from outside the public service. Now, I find it difficult to understand how we can have appointees from outside the public service. And this would be people appointed in our embassies, I would assume. Just help me to understand that phrase, appointees from outside the public service. Who are you actually referring to there? Then my next question would be, adding to what the Honorable Chai has raised about the staff issues. Let me go back to the WTO just to be consistent. When we were in Buenos Aires, we had capable people from DTI that received us, that arranged our entire program and things like that. I agree on the importance of consolidating that. But I ask myself now, those people that are paid by DTI and that are accountable to the DG in DTI, what's going to happen? Are they going to be accountable to the ambassador in Buenos Aires as well as the DG? Because this dual accountability, we know, may just complicate things. Just help us clarify that, how that accountability of our staff in these embassies would now, under the new dispensation, work. Then my final question, welcome, Honorable Tekhale, would relate to the three spheres of government, slide number 17. Have you looked at other legislation, particularly the constitution, when we talk about the autonomy of the three different spheres of government? Because I've listened to the Premier of Gauteng talking in the State of a Province address and mentioning the relationships that we have with other countries of the world, particularly in trade. That's one. But we also find that what's happening is that our municipalities, as another sphere of government, would have a partnership with countries abroad. A practical example thereof is Eastern Cape, where Eastern Cape would have a partnership with Volkswagen and therefore also with the municipality of where's Volkswagen in Germany? Wherever Volkswagen's offices are in Germany. And you have a city-to-city partnership. And there's huge benefits in that. Now, can you help us understand how that would fit into this, considering particularly the autonomy of municipalities? And I'm putting autonomy within brackets, particularly referring to the constitutional framework thereof. Let's leave it at that. Honorable Dikhale is also our co-chairperson of the Parliamentary Group on International Relations, the PGIR. So I pleaded with her that as the co-chairperson, she at least, and as a member of this committee from Limpopo, she be here so that we don't deny her the opportunity to raise any questions that she may have coming from the PGIR. But the one that I've raised on the WTO is but one of them. We are participating through PGIR in the International Parliamentary Union as well. It is a very important structure for us, and I thought that she, as I said when the meeting started, is torn in between various responsibilities, so she's not going to be with us for all the time. But Honorable Dikhale, once they've responded to give you a chance to settle in, I will give you an opportunity if you have any comments or questions to make, that you make them at that time. But listen to the responses then as well. I hear you saying that you are at peace, but Advocate and your team, back to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chi, and I will also ask my colleague Sia Mbungoshi to add throughout our questions, so that we make sure that we give you a full perspective of and responses to your questions. Honorable Chai, I think I should have started perhaps in sketching the challenges that we face as our democracy grew up, and I think we are now teenager in the history of the world. I think we're still very young. So perhaps we should start there. And as the chair also said, unfortunately, our executive isn't here. But what I will say to the committee, they have heard me numerous times, so they are very well aware of what I will be saying. I also will perhaps say some things that are quite sensitive that we won't want to be outside our committee. But basically, we started in 1994 with a very small footprint, global footprint in the world. The apartheid government had representation in only a few number of countries. And when the democratic dispensation came about, I think one of the biggest achievements for South Africa was indeed to be able to open so many missions across the world. But as we grew up and more find ourselves in a more complex and ever-changing environment, we also came to realize that we need to be more organized. We need to be a more professional setup. And we didn't have legislation, but we also faced the situation of where we had missions that consist of officials from various departments with no one solid command line. So it was very difficult to manage. There's no doubt about it, and you are saying that this sounds to you like a operational document, a standard operating policy document. The challenge for us with having that, and we had that for many, many years, and I think it became totally unsuccessful in the end, is the fact that you have so many government departments and so many role players inside the mission that you have to have something stronger than just a policy by one department. And there was never a piece of legislation that gave the responsibility to Durka specifically to coordinate the system. And I want to emphasize that the coordination and management is the important thing for Durka. And we are not, this bill does not intend to take away the duties and the responsibilities that officials, for instance, from DTI on trade would have. It does not intend to replace the role that the Department of Home Affairs plays at mission, because they have a specific task to execute. The bill is not aimed at bringing everybody into Durka. You will stay with your department. You would stay under your codes, and I will come to the specific questions on that. But what will happen is that we will have a professionalized system where there is one command, there is one foreign policy, and ask if we take into account that the foreign policy is an executive function of the president. So you would look at our constitution, the provincial government, only national government, and if you look at the schedule, it's only the Minister of Foreign Affairs that have been assigned for foreign relations there. But we live in a very modernized world where we have seen that provinces and states and cities play a very, very prominent role in the development of countries. So there is no misunderstanding or no misconception that the provinces and the cities and the municipalities have a very, very important role to play, because that's where your development actually happens. If you are a country like South Africa in a developmental state where you have to empower people on the ground with the economic benefits. So, but what this bill aims at is to formalize a coordination mechanism that would bring all the role players together. And I will specifically respond perhaps to that question also. I just wanted to put the challenge out there. What we had in the past was that we found that there are different messages going out from different departments. There would be a competition for investment from various departments. Some will very hard, go hard on tourism. Some will very go hard on say economic competencies, but they were never sort of a one solid view that South Africa needs A, B, and C, and in your particular country, this is a country where, for instance, motor vehicles are very, very important. We will all drive to get from this country these benefits. We were sort of all over the place, and we were not as effective as we could be. Also, what we found is that as part of the challenges, we would find that the provinces and cities would compete against each other for international competition. Now, I come from the Free State. It's very close to my heart. So I was very annoyed when I heard one day that somebody said, "Now you must come to this province because this province got everything in tourism. Forget about the Free State. They just have a little mountain and the rest is just nothing." Nothingness. I was... So we have that situation. So we just need a solid base from where we can build a one South Africa, a one good thing for all of the country. And we believe that the bill and not the policy will give us that. We have tried the policies, we have codes, we have policies, and we apply that, but the department will never... under legislative mandate being forced to work in this way, and we do believe that this is a very important thing. And it is an executive function, the execution of international relations, and we must obtain the most beneficial, or we must establish the most beneficial way of achieving that. Then, of course, there's many challenges that we found as we move in the world, that we find ourselves with properties in, coming from the apartheid era, many properties in Europe that we might not use or use, but we need to build some others or need to obtain others. And those properties are not properly maintained. So there were administrative challenges, there were management challenges, but the biggest challenge was this coordinated foreign policy action that we need to get going, and we need to professionalize our service. If we've looked, for instance, at the Chinese and the Indians, the Egyptians, and they are all are very, very professionalized foreign service and services, and we believe that that is one of the main things that we should achieve, because then we can have a focused, a sharp team, a team that is well trained, that can go out there in a very competitive world and get South Africa some of the opportunities that are there and make the most of that. So, yeah, anything on challenges that you want to add?
Just to, like with other departments, we have legal challenges. When we have officials from other departments being recalled, and then they take the department to, let's say, the CCMH or to the courts, in most cases, we are being cited as the party that was involved initially in the case, even though in most instances we won't be involved in the case. So we, in other cases, we find ourselves being jointly held liable with other departments.
Thanks, yes. So there's also those legal difficulties that we face and that we this bill will definitely iron out for us. The written submissions that were made, I'm sure that if we talk to our colleagues in the Secretariat on the other side, I'm sure that we that those can be made available to this committee. And why it took so long, it is a lot of, the committee might be best placed to answer, but it was a lot of submissions to work through. And so it took them a while to, I think, to listen to it, all of them, for us to respond, to come back and so on. But perhaps, and they also undertook some study visits to Namibia and to Canada. And I think we were very grateful for the way in which they applied themselves. Then on to the Honourable Dr. Blanche that asked about the administration of all foreign representatives. What this specifically means is that currently DERCO is responsible if a country sends diplomats here and they are all accredited, either the UK or China sends diplomats here to serve in South Africa, they are all accredited, and their whole stay in South Africa needs to be managed and administered. So that is the role, that in that particular section talks to that. That we would accredit them, they get an ID card, their whole stay here are regulated by DERCO and not by Home Affairs, for instance. And to be accredited, there's a specific list, you get onto a register, and you get immunities and privileges. So the immunities and privileges are managed by DERCO. It's managed now, but this gives DERCO then also the ability then to enforce some of the provisions in terms of this bill. Because not all foreign representatives are always well behaved. So that is also a reality. So that is what is important. As far as disciplinary issues is concerned, this was indeed a matter that was raised, especially by the defense, by the spooks, and by the defense, and by SAP. And that they, of course, are employed in terms of their own legislation with their own disciplinary code. So I think it's Section 6. Provide specifically for when there's an issue of misconduct around that involves one of them, their own disciplinary codes will be applicable. So this legislation will not have any effect on the way in which they were appointed in their particular service and the regulations that will be applicable to their service there. But the moment they get deployed or get posted abroad or being transferred abroad for that 4 years, there will be an additional set of conditions that will apply to them, and that would be based on this legislation. So if you have misbehaved and you are in defense will deal with you on a disciplinary manner, in a disciplinary manner. So that is one of the things that were raised and that we addressed in the bill. You also asked about the expertise to sell the properties and so on. Currently, in terms of legislation, the public works, the Department of Public Works are in charge of the management and disposal of all properties. But what is happening in actual life is that DERCO in many of these cases took over all of that responsibility, but not the final decision making. And we have found that many cases where we want to sell properties or where we have excess properties that we don't use, it is not easy to understand those markets. So our understanding is that the department will obtain expertise that are well versed with the conditions locally, and that will guide us. So we won't necessarily have experts, say property agents, in South Africa, because our properties are abroad and different legislation apply in those jurisdictions. But this is a major issue because some of those properties are vacant and they are not well kept and managed, and you know, certain things that are broken has not been fixed, so the property value has been devaluating. There's and some of the municipalities where these properties are, some of them are in very luxurious suburbs. The neighbors would start complaining. If you are in Switzerland and your grass is so longer than it's supposed to be, the neighbor is onto you. So there's all kinds of that kind of things that we have to deal with. So, and that would make it easier that you don't need to talk to Public Works now to find somebody to assist. Also, CIA attended was part of the study group tours to Walvis Bay and to Vintu, where many properties are, and it's a very sad story. So, I don't know, can you recall how many properties are there, CIA?
Actually, in Namibia, we have 20 properties, 4 in Walvis Bay, and then 16 in Vintu. And we have a big chancery, and most of the floors are not occupied. So it's just an empty building. And most of the properties are beyond repair.
So, you know, when Public Works need to also prioritize locally, because their main function is, of course, in South Africa, budget is a very big concern. Of course, you're closest to family, isn't it? You deal with your situations at home, and then it's difficult then also to have sufficient money for the upkeep of property. So now we need to dispose it. Now it's a very difficult process to go into the disposal of state properties. And now this bill will provide for the minister, in consultation with the other ministers, to look at those properties that can be disposed, take a decision, and the money of that properties will go back to the fiscus. So it will go back to the national fund and revenue fund and be there for use for South Africa where we need that. So some of the properties, especially when they are not as dilapidated as the ones that is in Vintu and Walvis Bay, are in very good areas, and you can get a lot of money for them. But you know, if you don't spend your house, you will get less for it. So it's that, and we believe that is something that was an important understanding that we reached. And there were lots of concerns. Public Works came back very strongly to argue why is this not the, why should this be done. But I think that all the departments that we have that have come around with to the understanding, as far as our understanding is that they are in support of the bill. Then, Chair, you mentioned again the unified foreign service. What we mean with unified exactly is, you know, we have officials from DTI, you have officials from Home Affairs, from Health. Especially in Geneva, there is a large component of many departments because there are many international organizations there. So these organizations, usually the expertise would be in the different departments. And then they all come together and they must all fall under the head of mission. But that doesn't mean that you wouldn't still have your mandate that you have to comply with it. From the Home Affairs Department, I will have my standing operating instructions. I will have to do this and this and this and deal with that. But when I report, I will report to the ambassador and to my head office. Because what we saw, and this will also vary, because we have people that are accredited in missions that are working in the intelligence field. They are, of course, sensitive information. So that would be managed very carefully. But that is the unified, that South Africa will have one voice, that it won't be in one mission, two competing voices. And I think that is important to understand that. Then the DTI, we I'm absolutely convinced that they play an essential role. What happened also in the past around the DTI is that because of budgetary restrictions, they have also withdrawn some of the trade representatives in various missions. Now, in some of the instances, they were of the view that, in our assessment, a trade representative in a particular country is essential. But then that was withdrawn. So we need to have a common understanding as a government. These are the opportunities that this country will have. If it's trade-driven, let's go for it. If it's health, let's chase after health. If it's tourism, if the Germans love us, then let's chase after that. If the Chinese are opening a very prosperous tourist in the country for us, let's get the tourists here. So that coordination was lacking, and we believe the bill gives the necessary mechanisms to do that. Appointees from outside public service, am I still on track? Okay. You will poke me, yeah? Appointees from outside public service, this is people that are usually, these would be appointed as heads of mission, or perhaps if there is a particular role for those persons. Heads of mission are not necessarily from in the department. They are very often from other spheres of life and other spheres of service. And then they would be appointed as heads of mission on a contractual basis. And that is what we mean, these appointees from outside the public service. So that includes then your heads of mission that the president is appointed. And that they will also be part of the, as usually as heads of mission, and they would then be brought in under the this act, because we have also in the past had situations where the heads of mission say that they are not reporting to the minister and to the DC because they have been appointed by the president. So the lines of reporting was not clear. We believe that would solve this.
Ms.
Iris' question was, it was again DTI. Okay. The accountability of the people from DTI to the ambassador, that is indeed what this act need to put in place, is the accountability of all to the head of mission, so that the head of mission would be able to, when they make the plan, the operations plan in the mission, that everybody in that mission, including the officials from the various departments, buy into one vision of how to implement the foreign policy. Now, other spheres of government, and I want to stress this, in terms of the modern diplomatic practice, these spheres of government are playing an important role in the sense that they are actually the custodians of many of the development projects that would be negotiated. But what, as I said, also with our uncoordinated approach at present, we have competing municipalities, we have competing provinces, and they compete in many instances for services at the same place. Just for example, we have queries from our partners in Brazil, in Cuba, and I think most lately also India. that ask us in a very diplomatic manner why it is necessary for them, because they are one country, to see 9 or provinces from South Africa. Why is it not possible to see them, to say, see them as a group? Or why is this, well, why is there always a study tour from some of our provinces, and why don't it seems to them, but very politely, it seems to them that there's no communication. One province will come but not share their experience with the other province. So we have all types of things to answer for. And then we also have a situation where provinces would just be at the airport and phone the ambassador to say, we are here. And the ambassador would say, where are you? And they would say, we are here. And then they're at the airport. And then literally there was no communication. Now, protocol-wise, the poor ambassador will die of embarrassment, because that he must be there, and he must be, that is his role. He has to accept receive the dignitaries, and the staff, he needs to. There's lots of things, and these budget implications, because now a South African ambassador would want you not to come there and not have a drive or something. So there's that type of thing. So we need to coordinate that. And because we have in the past there's been this forum, we call it the CISA, the Coordinating of International Relations Forum, but it was never actually properly attended by provinces. What we have established, and I think it's starting to work very well, is that when provinces and when municipalities want to go out and conclude certain documents, they don't conclude international agreements as such. But we in DERCO, and especially in my office, we assist them with drafting documents that can actually assist them to bring whatever the development opportunities they want to bring them out. But the competencies between what the municipality can do and what the province can do and what the national department competencies are very often also not coordinated. So, for instance, the Department of Health, the National Department of Health, will only become aware of a provincial government of health going somewhere if we alert them by the fact that they was a call from that person to the ambassador that they already arrived. So, and that cannot be a professional thing. And we want to be Team South Africa, all everybody. And nobody will be excluded by this bill. But this bill needs to be there to bring everybody on board in the same direction. We need to go through the door, and we can't rush and all bump into each other. So that is basically how the three spheres of government will come together in that forum where the minister will chair it, and they will begin a discussion as to opportunity. For each year, the idea is that they will have a plan, and the provinces, local governments will bring their plans along, and that's how a huge plan to deal with that. I think I've covered that, but we are available for more.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, I'm going to give you a chance. If there's something else that's burning, let me just say two things. The one is that the objective of this session is for the department to sell the importance of this bill to us. So if there's any questions related thereto, but I think that there is a point where the advocate just said it's sensitive. Maybe it's important for us to just speak to two elements of the sensitivity. The one element is, if you look, for example, at Ebola, right, you'll find that the spokesperson for South Africa on that was the Minister of Health, Aaron Moshalele. But we have done significant work in West Africa and also with our labs in Pretoria. Now, what this legislation is doing is to say, but this must be properly coordinated. because it's not a hit and run issue. Our ambassador in that particular country where we are supporting that government needs to be informed and needs to be our advocate. It needs to be our country ambassador there. So Minister Aaron Mashaledi was struggling first with how do you deal with the ambassador. Now this legislation would help us to streamline that coordination and communication. Let me mention the last one. I followed the news yesterday with great pain about the conflict in which part of Africa is it? There in West Africa as well, where there's conflict happening as we speak. Is it? It's not Guinea. It's not in Guinea. No. Mali has just won the soccer against. But there's a country in West Africa where there's serious conflict now. Now what's happening is that the Department of Defense, military intelligence would be involved in that because of the AU position on silencing the guns. It's happening in the Democratic Republic of Congo as well. How do we ensure that those officials from the Department of Defense that's operating in that country is held accountable by us as members of parliament as well? And this legislation is also going to help us on that. Let me just put the last one to that. In the spit, if I use the right word, between Russia and the United States. It came out that in every embassy you have a spook. Most of the foreign embassies, particularly of the West, have spooks in their embassies. We don't have as many, if we do have, as what they have. But we're saying in instances where we have, those officials would have to be accountable to the ambassador as well. But then, say hypothetically, if I'm an ambassador in Kinshasa, I don't know anything about military operations. But what this legislation is saying is that that person there would be accountable to both the ambassador, who may not understand the operations properly, but also accountable to the department that has a better understanding than the ambassador. So it would, as has been said in the presentation, increase the effectiveness of our presence in those countries. We're trying to streamline that now, as the advocate has said, as our democracy is growing. I would say, as our democracy is maturing, we are finding that we now have to introduce new legislation to also deal with things that we did not consider as important in 1994 or 1996. I noticed the Honorable Khai and the Honorable Derblanche, and then the Honorable
Thanks, Chair. I think also thanks for the responses to the question. Just clarify the points. But also the objective, the example that you're making about the Free State, for me, therefore, it also talks to the provinces as well as the local government. Why therefore it is not Section 76, so that they also are consulted and they have their own input. The second point is I see at the organizations and institutions that were consulted, I want you to find out how does this bill relate to, say, an institution like Trans South Africa, because I don't see it represented here, even through its mother department, which is Department of Communication. I see there is Department of Telecommunication, but I don't see Department of Communication. And I know Brand South Africa is an entity of a Department of Communication. So how does the bill relate to the staff of Brand South Africa? And also, how does the bill relate to special envoys? Are they covered by this bill? And I read, last week or 2 weeks ago, the dispute or conflict between the head of mission or ambassador in Switzerland with some of the staff members. I don't know if the bill could address those kinds of challenges that are experienced by the staff or by the ambassador herself in Switzerland. The last point is, what is the view of the Office of the State Law Advisor on the constitutionality of the bill? I'm raising this in relation particularly to the point that talks about the application of the bill, that it supersedes all other acts if those acts are in conflict, particularly the Public Service Act is in conflict with this. Because for me, laws are all equal, and the Constitution is the one that is then supreme. So I don't understand, therefore, when you say this law, if there is a conflict, it will be the one that will be applicable. I'm thinking about laws such as the Labor Relations Act, for example, that are administered by Department of Labor. If a matter is related to labor relations, for example, I think Department of Labor should be then the department that is responsible. But now, if the bill says, in terms of the application, it will be this bill or this act that will apply. So those are the issues that I wanted to raise. Thanks. Honourable Dihane, you'll have the last slide.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My apology for arriving late. I don't have a specific question, but I was touched by the example whereby the ambassador will just receive a call, people arriving at the airport telling the ambassador that we are here. So I just want to check, because indeed that was an embarrassing situation. We once visited China, and when we arrived there, they were complaining that last week they were hosting another province that with the same committee. I just want to check as to how is this going to be resolved, and did international relations maybe checked with other countries as to how they run their oversight visit or whatever you call it, if ever they want to learn outside, because our programs are not the same and our provinces are many. So if ever maybe we don't have a method as to how we're going to solve that, then this is going to then repeat itself. The only problem is when people leave the country, knowing that where they are going, there's an ambassador, and they don't even inform the person that we are coming. That is the only problem. But this issue of us visiting not at the same time might continue if ever we don't have a specific program to follow. Thanks.
Thank you very much. You can respond and make your concluding remarks as well, please.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and Sia will also add, I'm not that complete. I think that we have consulted as far as we could with all role players. We consulted with national departments, because this bill provides for the national competency of the exercise of international relations. We have argued, and the state law advisors who are here from Justice, that because the conduct of international relations are just a national competency, the bill was banned in that fashion. But that is not to say that there is not a role for provinces and cities to play in this whole process. what the bill is actually doing, and perhaps I can also jump to what other countries are doing. It varies very much. So in China and in India, it's very controlled. No problems, no city will do anything that the national national government is not part of the plan for national government would say. So it depends from your type of your country setup, I think, as to how it's regulated. But what we have recognized in South Africa is that we need all hands on deck. There's no doubt about that. And that is where we believe that we will have to have a relationship with Brand South Africa, with SA Tourism, all of the entities that are working outside of government, but and that's not part of national government, but that links up into government. We will have MOUs with those bodies and companies. To establish a working relationship with them. At present, it's done in a very fragmented way on a case-to-case basis, and we believe it's not optimal. We have to have one vision, and there can be many, many legs that can carry us to our goal. So that is how we see that, and we believe that there will still be a lot of work to be done in for the implementation of this bill. In any case, we will also hear from all stakeholders to see how we can strengthen the systems that we would want to put in place. As far as special envoys are concerned, they would usually a special envoy is assigned as an appointee from outside the public service. And those people will be covered. They are also covered in the Diplomatic Immunities and Privileges Act. So we intend to cover them also under this act. They will fall under the conditions of service as provided for in this act. The question of the conflict of staff, as you've indicated also, the standard operating procedures for administration of staff is essential. There are conflicts in many areas of missions. This particular one, I know that the department is giving attention to it. There is going to be investigation on that. The existing regulation or the existing systems and codes will be strengthened in terms of this bill on how to exactly deal with those types of situations, also in a speedy manner to contain any embarrassment for the Republic. That is very important for us, is to contain any reputational damage. And any story, whether it's true or not, with such a nature, is bad news for South Africa, and that's the last thing we want to have. But we will strengthen our regulations that will be published to deal with those types of staff conflicts. Applications of law, I don't know, would you want to help us out with that one. Okay. Please, Ms.
Leah. Thanks, Chair. With regard to the application of law, the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and everything is consistent with the Constitution. So basically what it happens is that the Constitution will be the threshold with regard to everything. But with regard to the application of the Act, usually there is a practice in law, for example, if you have legislation, it must first be read in a manner which is consistent with the Constitution. Where there's conflict of laws, where it can't be read, like say for example, if there's maybe a conflict with this law and another Act of Parliament, which is obviously not the Constitution, we usually look at the general versus the more specific. If there's a general piece of legislation which deals, say for example, with people abroad at the foreign services, but if there's a specific piece of legislation which deals specifically with that category, the specific piece of legislation will generally override the general, because the specific was designed and tailor-made to provide, to deal with particular circumstances related to that particular matter. So you'll find that the specific will trump the general. And we also find usually that the newer legislation will trump the older legislation also generally. That's just a the rule of thumb. And then maybe we can just also add with regard to the tagging. We've considered the provisions of this bill. We considered all the provisions. And usually with regard to tagging, there was a Tongwane matter, which was a, I don't even pronounce that correct, but was a matter which went to the Constitutional Court. And the Constitutional Court expanded or provided further jurisprudence with regard to tagging. Before, we used to look at the list, we used to use a Canadian approach where we look at the purpose and effect or those type of things. Now with that judgment, the court looked at the substantial measure. So we look at, does this bill in a substantial measure deal with any of the subject matters listed in Schedule 4 or 5 to the Constitution? And we considered the provisions of this bill against Schedule 4 and Schedule 5 to the Constitution, and we found that it does not in a substantial measure deal with the matters listed in Schedule 5. 4 or 5 to the Constitution, and that's why we tag it as a 75. Okay, thanks. And we found that the bill is constitutionally sound. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you very much for the State Law Advisor. They have worked with us diligently and through many difficult hours and nights, so thank you for that explanation. Then, Honourable Member Dighali, how do we intend to resolve the issue of this practicality with provinces with perhaps or municipalities would just rock up and ask the same type of questions for the same government? Is that we have two mechanisms that we need to strengthen. The one is the coordinating mechanism. We call it CIFR. It is the coordination of international relations between all three spheres of government. That would be hosted or chaired by the minister, but there will also be a number of matters that will be discussed, and there will be one plan. As I understand it, that we will say that for this year or for this 3 years, this is our development needs, this is what needs to happen. Provinces and will of course have the opportunity, SALGA, to input into the program. And then also, we have guidelines that is now before for Cabinet, or that's going to Cabinet now, on coordination of international relations, where there will is a requirement that will be gazetted, so it will become binding. There will be a requirement now that when provinces or any national departments, whenever there's a visit or there's negotiations of agreements and MOUs, that needs to be followed, a standard process needs to be followed so that we can alert the ambassadors, so that ambassadors can make sure that there is a reception on the other side, and there is a possibility that you can actually obtain what you are going there for. We have found that in the past, a province will visit a particular country with a particular question or need for assistance, and that country has no ability to help. So it is an embarrassment all over. So we must also understand that certain countries have certain expertise, and that needs to be coordinated so that also that provinces and national departments and DERCO all have a common idea, that the ambassador in Kinshasa is fully briefed on what is happening, the challenges, what are the implications of that defense operations, that they will have a status of force agreement before we deploy, so that there's a coordination and not this fragmented situation that doesn't always reflect good on South Africa, and we are convinced doesn't bring home the fattest chicken. So, and that's what we need. We need that those opportunities to be harvested and bring home and put to the good of the country. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honourable members, can we conclude on that note with the presentation, if you will allow me to just share this information before we look at the minutes of our last meeting, that the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, through the Minister, convenes biannual meetings of the heads of missions, where all the heads of missions come to South Africa. Now, in our term, there's been one where the staff were there, with me. I can't remember the year, but it's 4 years ago. Then there was one last year, in October, that coincided with the investment conference that was held. So what happened was that the minister of DIRCO also deemed it appropriate to invite ministers from the economic cluster to come and brief the ambassadors. It's what we call the heads of missions meeting, OMS. And having participated in that meeting for the 3 days that they met, many of the issues that you are raising here also, I could assure you, were addressed in that meeting of the heads of missions. I hope that we could get the record of the deliberations, but you'll see what is the status of that. If we could get it, it might be very helpful to us. With that said, thank you very much to the team from DIRCO for the presentation. We are going to conclude within 3 minutes. We would want to have you joining us for lunch. There are some very light lunches that would be served, if you would not mind bearing with us just for those maximum 3 minutes. Honourable members, we have before us two sets of minutes. It's the minutes of the 30th of January and the minutes of the 13th of February. Can I ask that we just look at the 30th of January, page 1. That's attendance register, page 2. Page 3 was the committee comments and deliberations, and this was on the National Gambling Bill. Page 4 is a continuation of the comments, and then we have the program that was presented to us, and on page 5 is basically the adoption of the minutes of the 28th November 2018. Are you at liberty to propose for the acceptance of that, Honorable Dikhale?
I propose.
Thank you. Seconded by Honorable Khai. That deals with the 30th of January. The 13th of February, we looked at the negotiating mandates on the Credit Amendment Bill, page 1. Page 2. I can't remember the apologies from Honorable Michalakis, but we will leave that. Okay. Page 3. What Slupeka has done there, if you look at page 3, 4, 5, and 6, 7, remember we requested the parliamentary legal team to prepare a document for us. So Slupeka has included that document in the minutes. Right up to page 9. Where we then looked also at the Copyright Amendment Bill and the matters related thereto. It concludes with the committee welcomed the briefing on the two bills, and we thank the Department of Trade and Industry. Can we, Honorable Ntebe?
Before you move, Chair. I was not here, but I just want to check what you're saying about the Honourable Mikhalik.
No, I'm saying it's not a train smash. We'll just leave it. Honourable Deve?
Chair, the summarized version is assisting. I think it's something that is going to assist us moving into the future. If we can continue doing this, because it gives you the gist of what we discuss and what we agreed about. I suggest that we adopt it.
Thank you, Slupeka. With that appeal that you and our content advisor, the content advisor who is standing in, is now helping Slupeka as well to get the minutes and to do it again. Honorable Khai?
Mm-hmm.
There's proposed and seconded. Thank you very much, Honorable Members.
I forgot to
you raise a concern there that I noticed, particularly when we are in this committee, when we deal with the bills, the tendency of the absence of the parliamentary legal services. So I wanted to say, perhaps if you can follow up that the administration or the secretary of the NCOP, Advocate Peter.
Thank you very much. Honorable Zekhale.
Chairperson, I'm not against what you say, but I want to say, as long as we form a quorum, we need to continue because we are members of parliament and we have different responsibilities. If you take it to the secretary, it's like other members voluntarily, they just don't come to work. It mustn't be general. If ever maybe there's two or three members that we know that this one don't even know whether this committee still exists, maybe we need to check with those members and talk to them before we report to our principal. I think it won't be good for us.
No, he's talking about the staff.
The staff?
Yeah.
Or not us?
No, not us.
Or my apology then.
He's talking about the parliamentary legal services.
Oh, my apology.
They should be here because sometimes, I mean, with some of the other legislation, we had serious questions to the legal services unless they feel confident in their colleagues in the department. But still, we need them to be here. Because sometimes we want to check. Like the question that Honorable Khairi is on constitutionality, to say, but department, what do you think? Rebecca, just make sure.
And I support.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, just the last item. I've received an invitation here from the Department of Tourism inviting us to the Meetings Africa. It's not the tourism in Daba. Meetings Africa that is being held from Sunday, the 24th of February, that's just the opening in the evening at 6:30. I'll send this to you. But then they're meeting on the 25th of February and the 26th and on the 27th. Now, when I looked at this, I did not respond because I felt, and they acknowledge in the letter, that it clashes with our program. But they're inviting all of us to the meeting. Now, it's being held in Johannesburg. So for me, I'm advantage. I can go Sunday evening and maybe Monday. I'm not saying I am going. I don't think that I'll go. But for other members, I felt that we could go the Monday. Now, Honorable Khai, if I look at Tuesday, do we have a meeting of...
No, in terms of the program, we're dealing with the submissions from the assembly.
On Tuesday? Yeah, so we need to be here on Tuesday. Okay. So we need to be here on Tuesday. Can I then also, on your behalf, respond to the minister and apologize that we cannot attend because of our schedule? Thank you very much, honorable members. Lupeka, I think that covers us on all of them. Members, there is, just for your information, the National... Lupeka? National Broadcast Association that's asking us for an extension on their submission on the copyright and performance. I'm just mentioning it now. It's not going to be minuted. I'm mentioning it for your information because I'm taking a principled position where I'm saying if we have a cut-off date, the submissions must be made before the cut-off date. Once we change it, we are opening ourselves up to serious problems. Because we're going to be asked, why did you do it for one? Can't you do it for us as well? But Lubeck and I will be meeting. We'll consult with the legal advisors on exactly how we deal with that. Thank you very much. We stand adjourned. We are meeting next week, Tuesday, at 10 o'clock. The notice will come to you, and we'll be looking at the National Gambling Bill.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members.
Thank you.
That's the rule that the man must sit first class on the flag.
No, I spoke to him already. So I sent him the one of the last one.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
You're becoming like me.